We have so far been discussing and tracing the development of the seeker of the divine in the way of works. We have analyzed the various constituents of the path, the way he equips himself, the way he treads the path, the difficulties and the dangers that face him, and the consummation at which he arrives by his own effort, seconded by the divine grace. Come to the stage when the seeker arrives at the stage of a perfect worker for the divine. He has eliminated from himself the last traces of ego, not only the ego, but also the egoity. He has taken care to shed the shadows of egoism, not merely from his dynamic parts, but also psychologically. He has eliminated desire, the personal desire, either in the choice of work or in the preference for fruits. He has patiently worked out the successive steps of his consecration, the self-consecration, and translated his central determination to surrender to the divine in terms of his daily life. In each step of his exertion, in each throughout of his energies, he has taken care to cultivate the attitude of self-consecration. From being a worker, he has developed into an instrument. From being an instrument, he has graduated into being a channel of the divine puissance. Through the divine puissance, he has secured contact with the Lord of works, the master of his being. Having arrived at this stage, what remains for the worker? Has he still got to do works? Or is he expected to withdraw into the bliss of the self, into the silence, the peace of the transcendent? There are traditions, notably in India, which counsel this course. They look upon work as part of an inferior movement. Work has to be done indeed, but as part of the life of ignorance which is imposed upon the developing soul. And only as long as one is in the belt of ignorance, if by some means one has got above this frontier of ignorance and falsehood, works are no more binding. Not only not binding, but works are a nuisance. They are a standing danger for one to slip back into the bondage of karma. Great philosophers those who have even founded systems, have looked upon works as a means for working out one's karma, and after that as a concession to the world, so as not to disturb the faith of those who are still in ignorance. This is an error, and thrice an error. Secondly, there are those who say that the seeker who has arrived at this consummation has no obligation to work for himself, but he has duties to society, the duty to society. Sri Aurobindo observes that really, that there is no duty but only duties, each one conflicting with the other. Service for humanity, service for the world, perfectly right, but on the condition that you regard the master of works in humanity. If you have realized the God, the Divine, the Lord in your yogic discipline, in your sadhana, it is incomplete. Individual realization is incomplete unless it is extended into the realization of the universal Godhead. And the Godhead in the universe does not exist in a vacuum. He exists in all around us. The Divine is everywhere. The service that an enlightened seeker has to render is to God in the world, God in society, God in all levels of creation. If one has this conception, if one is alive to this truth, then service to humanity, service to the world has a meaning. Individually, he has no claim. He does not decide what work he is going to do. No standards, human standards, which have been erected for developing souls are applicable to him. Indian wisdom has long recognized this freedom for the liberated soul. It has given them an utter freedom to do what they choose. Indeed, this freedom has been misused by the pseudo-liberated, by the pseudo-saints and seekers. But that's no reason why one shouldn't see the truth of the liberty given to the seeker. These, the least movements in action, in thought of the liberated man, each movement proceeds from a different source than the human. He has contacted and is in contact with the individual divine center stationed at the core of the being. His external consciousness is in tune, is put in the right wavelength to catch the vibrations, the intention of the Lord seated within. He does not care whether the action that he does conforms to the social and other standards obtaining at the moment. All that he is concerned is to receive the command and carry it out. This, a seeker of this type, who has arrived, he may outwardly look as not very different from others, or he may be a world-shaking figure. He may choose to abide by the rules and standards that govern the society in which he lives. He may be led to shake those very foundations, destroy them, and attempt a new creation. All that is dependent upon the divine will. Following the way of knowledge, one may arrive at a total freedom in the mind from the last reaches of ignorance and falsehood. One may perceive the divine everywhere, all around in the universe, and even beyond. And on the higher levels of his awakened mind, active mind, he may breathe the air of the transcendent. One may follow the way of love, get melted in the whole of the being and consciousness in adoration to the Lord, to the Divine. Become one in the flow upwards to the Master. Become one with it. But both these movements, both these realizations are not complete unless one dynamizes this double spiritual realization in terms of action. Unless the spiritual gains of the soul are rendered effectively in terms of work, works for the divine in oneself, for the divine in others, for the divine overarching the creation, there is no integral fulfillment. Humanity has trod separate ways of realization for centuries. But the time has come when all the old gains have to be fused, all the ancient paths are converging towards a new meeting place, where the static and the dynamic movements of the creative divine meet in the human individual. The yoga of works lays down the basis, describes the process, and posits the goal. There is no one rule, one regulation governing even one seeker. The modes of his working, the ways of his looking, change from day to day. What appeared relevant yesterday seems silly another day. Everything concerning the divine worker is to be evaluated from the standpoint of the consciousness that is growing in him. Consciousness, the development of consciousness is the first consideration, not the quantity of work that is done. I would say not even the quality of work that is done. But the graduation affected in the deepening or in the ascent of his consciousness, that ultimately is the significance of work. I have seen people working day and night, completing items of work which would take many more days and handing it over to mother. The moment she has touched it, she has not even seen what is inside, she has handed it back, it is labor. It took me a little while to understand that what she missed there was the spirit of consecration, the spirit of conscious work. It is not mechanical work, it is not beautiful work that appeals to the divine, but the link that is established through that work with the divine consciousness is what is important and supreme. This consideration of the spirit of work is of utmost relevance to all of us today, whether in the ashram or at Auroville or outside in the world, for those who want to progress towards the divine consciousness. Efficiency, technique, know-how, all of them are important indeed, but in their own place. But from the point of the essential spiritual progress, spiritual evolution, for which we are born today, it is the quality of consciousness that is poured out in the energy, the physical, the vital, and the mental, psychological energy, that goes in the world. It is that quality that has to be attended to. One has to be vigilant to keep it always at a higher level, unmixed with the lower movements of action and reaction in the environment. There are plenty of occasions when there are provocations in a situation where work is to be done. But a sadhak cannot afford to play into the reactions of others. He has to maintain his poise, remember why he is working, what the work means to him and his maker. The psychological, the spiritual background of work is what gives the true significance to the work on hand. We have now come to the concluding chapter of the Yoga of Works in the Synthesis of Yoga that we started somewhere in the beginning of this year. The 13th and the last chapter, which I do not propose to take up at this stage, concerns work and the supramental consciousness. Not having attained anything of the truth consciousness, at any rate not being conscious of it on any part of my being, I do not presume to talk to you, friends, on that subject. we would reserve it for a later occasion. When we meet next, we shall take up the yoga of knowledge. It is natural succession to the studies that we have been doing for works, refine the being, raise the consciousness, keep it alert, awaken the mind, lift it from the tamasic levels through the rajasic ones to the sattvic planes of enlightenment. If we have understood even partly the 12 chapters of the Yoga of Works, we are certainly qualified to enter into the portals of the Yoga of Knowledge. When we meet again next year on the 3rd of January, we shall begin our labors. I would invite questions from friends. Last time we were hurried, and I believe some questions were left over. We could usefully spend the rest of the time taking up questions. Yes. Necessarily, but the impact on either the object or the situation is first on the subtler level. The intention with which you act, the achievement that you can effect at the level of your consciousness, has its reactions. It does touch what you work upon first on the subtler levels. People become conscious of it only when it emerges on the surface. Yes, the more one is conscious when one works, that quality of consciousness is naturally imparted to what one works upon. If, for instance, you take a pen and each time you write with the fountain pen, with the pen, you are breathing a higher consciousness. You think at a high level. You feel at a little deeper level. And what you write with the pen comes from that level. The pen does absorb something of that consciousness which is vibrant in you at that time. That is the meaning of the mementos. Is it mementos? Sorry. Of things used by great people, by saints and seers. Because they have those vibrations to us. And they link one immediately with the person who has used it, with that consciousness.
Thank you.
it need not happen on the physical plane. What it means, it is a poetic record of the old creation being demolished, yielding place to the new. As far as we are concerned on earth, the roots of the present creation, civilization, have already been destroyed on the subtler levels. Physical catastrophes are no longer necessary. The roots have got loose. All the unrest, all the disturbance you are seeing all over the world today is because the bearings of the old civilization are gone. No cataclysms are necessary for them. They have taken place. Man today is a mental being. The catastrophes have happened on the mental plane. All the ideas, cherished notions, what we thought sufficient, they have all been demolished. Man knows that he has no further mental values or standards to stand by. The demolition has taken place on the mental plane. And it is, things are ready for the new truths to organize themselves. It is, as I see it, as a part of this adjustment between the receding past and the emerging new, that there are disturbances in physical nature. Mother has explained in the earlier conversations how when the higher and the newer forces act upon the earth, physical earth consciousness, when the reception is not enough, when the assimilation doesn't keep pace, there are certain imbalances. And external results ensue, like earthquakes, floods, disasters. But that is, it is not that every physical disaster has a spiritual origin. I do not think so. Certain catastrophes are the work, positive work, of the Antichrist, of the hostile powers. Certain are the result of imbalances due to the resistance, not necessarily ill will, but the inability to adjust, to harmonize with the new conditions. If Mother has laid stress today on the necessity of sticking to truth and giving goodbye to falsehood, it is because she sees that certain progress in certain directions is held up because individuals are still sticking to untruth. One individual is enough to spread disaster. All are not vigilant. All are not always conscious to reject, to keep out the elements of danger. One person in tune with falsehood, consciously or unconsciously, becomes a medium of the hostiles and is in a position to sabotage the whole movement. It is a warning against this eventuality. Possibility, theoretical possibility, that the mother has been warning of catastrophes, danger. But I am a believer in grace. grace is cascading. Whatever the resistances, whatever the ill wills and falsehoods, individual falsehoods, they will be swept away. As long as Mother is holding the fort of truth and the divine truth consciousness on earth, there cannot be any irretrievable disaster, natural or otherwise. She asks for an individual contribution of giving up falsehood and choosing the truth. At every moment, she wants each individual here to choose the truth. Unless we cultivate the habit of thinking true, acting true, and feeling true, the truth consciousness, when it descends into us, when it tries to descend into us, will not find a home in us. That is what Sri Aurobindo means when he says, keep the temple clean if you wish to install there the living presence. Yes, she did say, and I would add, or she said elsewhere, that the consciousness has gone low. That is why the cyclones, which are quite common in this area, in these parts, she said normally they get diverted to some other place. But this year they struck straight into the heart of Pondicherry. Because the general consciousness is low. I should think it is self-evident. Individually, in each case, it may not be so. But collectively, she sees a setback, a temporary holdback. She herself has explained that in collective movements like this, there are always rhythms of going back, going forward, double forward. And I suppose we are at the moment in one of those lagging movements. She has normally she does not say, but this time she has said, in order to give a fillip to the aspiration in all of us, to help us to go ahead. It is good to take it that way, that if all of us had the right attitude, the right opening to the grace, the right sense of harmony between ourselves, oneness, love, understanding, after all they are indispensable for the new creation. If they had been organized on a compact basis, certainly the cyclone would not have struck, which is true. We can prevent another cyclone by girding up our loins. What is important to us who have taken the plunge is not so much to escape the physical cyclone as to miss the hour of God. Time is fleeting. The other cannot be eternal. It comes once in 1,000 years. It is, as Sri Aurobindo has explained, the present embodiment is a chance for man to link himself with the transcendent, to bring down the higher creation on earth. It is the one opportunity for the individual, the universal, and the transcendent aspects of the truth to be realized in an integrated manner in the human being. This is possible because there is one who has that synthesis in herself, who is simultaneously living on these three planes of existence, who can individualize the universal truth, who can bring to bear on earth the verities of the transcendent. What has been made possible in one body establishes that possibility for all. And she is here to reach that realization, triple realization to all. This is the hour of God, which one shall not miss. To miss that would be the greatest disaster for those who are born at this moment, who have been given the privilege. Whether all of us are aware of it or not, among the souls that are present in the ashram and Auroville today, there are those who have been participating in the history of mankind thousands of years ago. Great figures, military heroes, historians, poets, creators, artists, painters, people who laid the foundations of huge number of branches of science. They are here. They have chosen to wait for this hour and are present. That shows this is the hour for fulfillment. This is the hour when all have gathered. It is time that each one wakes up, catches the current, and does his part of the divine sacrifice that is in truth. Whether we understand the full implications of what Sri Aurobindo and the mother have written or said or not, we are at the heart of the teaching. The truth vibrates. The mind may not understand, but the being here knows. If only we withdraw our preoccupation with external objects and movements and make it a habit to become inly conscious, to see from there, to shift our center of consciousness from out to in, to confirm the poise of action and thought within the soul, we will have taken a great step forward.